Chapter 3. Reconstruction and the New South. 1865 to 1896. Section 1. Reconstruction Plans. American Diary. Major Henry Rathbone tried to seize John Wilkes Booth after Booth shot President Lincoln at Ford's Theater. As Booth leaped over the railing of the presidential box onto the stage, Rathbone cried, "Stop that man!" Rathbone later stated, "I then turned to the president. I saw that he was unconscious and, supposing him mortally wounded, rushed to the door for the purpose of calling medical aid." From the Assassination of President Lincoln and the Trial of the Conspirators. Reconstruction Debate. Main Idea. Government leaders disagreed about how Southern states could rejoin the Union. History and You. Have you ever had an argument with a friend? How did you resolve your differences? Read to learn how the North and South tried to work out their problems after the Civil War. Major Henry Rathbone and the rest of the nation were deeply shocked by Abraham Lincoln's assassination. 4 years of civil war, followed by the president's death, shook the nation. The Union was saved, but Americans still faced the difficult challenges of reuniting and rebuilding their country. Southern states, because they had left the Union in 1861, needed to be readmitted. The economy and society of the devastated South also needed to be rebuilt. Americans disagreed bitterly, however, about how to accomplish these tasks. This period of rebuilding is called Reconstruction. This term also refers to the various plans for readmitting Southern states to the Union. Lincoln's Plan. Before his assassination, President Lincoln offered the first plan for accepting the Southern states back into the Union. In December 1863, during the Civil War, the president announced what came to be known as the 10% Plan. When 10% of the voters of a state took an oath of loyalty to the Union, the state could form a new government and adopt a new constitution that banned slavery. Lincoln wanted to encourage Southerners who supported the Union to take charge of the state governments. He believed that punishing the South would serve no useful purpose and would only delay healing the torn nation. Lincoln offered amnesty, a pardon, to all white Southerners who were willing to swear loyalty to the Union, except Confederate leaders. In 1864, three states under the Union occupation, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Tennessee, set up governments under the plan. These states then became caught in controversy when Congress refused to seat the state's representatives. The Radicals' Plan. Some Republicans considered Lincoln's plan too forgiving. They favored a more radical or extreme approach and were called Radical Republicans. Radical Republican Thaddeus Stevens declared that Southern institutions must be broken up and relaid, or all our blood and treasure have been spent in vain. Congress was controlled by the Radical Republicans and voted to deny seats to representatives from any state that was readmitted under Lincoln's plan. In July 1864, Congress passed the Wade-Davis Bill. To rejoin the Union, a state had to meet several requirements. First, a majority of the state's white males had to swear loyalty to the Union. Second, only white males who swore they had not fought against the Union could vote for delegates to a state constitutional convention. Finally, any new state constitution had to ban slavery. Lincoln refused to sign the bill, but he wanted new state governments to form quickly so that order could be restored in the South as soon as possible. Lincoln realized that he would have to compromise with the Radical Republicans. The Freedmen's Bureau. In March 1865, Lincoln and Congress set up the Freedmen's Bureau. The Bureau helped African Americans adjust, or adapt, to freedom. It provided food, clothing, and medical services. It helped freed people acquire land or find work for fair wages. The Bureau also set up schools, staffed mostly by teachers from the North. It gave aid to new African American institutions of higher learning, such as Atlanta University, Howard University, and Fisk University. Reading check. Contrasting. What were the differences between Lincoln's views and the Radical Republicans' views concerning Reconstruction? Johnson's Plan. Main Idea. After Lincoln was assassinated, Andrew Johnson became president and announced his plan of restoration. History and You. How do you think Abraham Lincoln's death might affect plans to unify the nation? Read about President Johnson's Reconstruction Plan. Shortly after the Freedmen's Bureau was founded, a tragic event took place that shocked the nation. On April 14, 1865, President Lincoln attended a play at Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C. John Wilkes Booth, an actor and Confederate sympathizer, entered the private box and shot Lincoln in the head. Lincoln died several hours later. News of the president's assassination swept across the nation. African Americans mourned the man who had helped them win their freedom. Northern whites grieved for the leader who had saved the Union. When Lincoln died, Vice President Andrew Johnson became president. Johnson was born in the South but supported the Union during the war. Johnson soon revealed his plan for Reconstruction. Called Restoration, his plan would grant amnesty to most Southerners once they swore loyalty to the Union. High-ranking Confederates could be pardoned only by appealing to the president. This provision revealed Johnson's desire to humiliate the leaders who he believed had tricked the South's people into seceding. Johnson also allowed only loyal, pardoned whites to vote for delegates to the state constitutional conventions. Stating that white men alone must manage the South, Johnson opposed equal rights for African Americans. Before a state could re-enter the Union, it had to denounce secession and ban slavery. States also had to ratify the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, passed by Congress in January 1865. This amendment abolished slavery throughout the United States. By the end of 1865, all former Confederate states except Texas had new governments and were ready to rejoin the Union. Reading check, specifying. What did the 13th Amendment accomplish? Section 2. Radicals in Control. American Diary. For 3 days in May 1866, white mobs in Memphis, Tennessee burned African-American churches, schools, and homes. An army officer investigating the causes of the riot later reported, 3 African-American churches were burned. Also, about 50 private dwellings, owned, occupied, or inhabited by freedmen as homes, and in many instances containing the hard earnings of months of labor. From Reports of Outrages, Riots, and Murders, January 15, 1866 to August 12, 1868, by Colonel Charles F. Johnson. African Americans' Rights. Main idea. When Northerners realized that African Americans in the South were still being mistreated, they worked to find a way to help them. History and you. Think about the rights American citizens have. Read to find out how Congress made sure that formerly enslaved African Americans became citizens. Many Northerners saw the Memphis riot as an attempt by whites to terrorize African Americans and keep them from enjoying and practicing their new freedoms. The Memphis incident and similar riots in other Southern cities helped convince or persuade radical Republicans that President Johnson's Reconstruction plan was not strong enough. During the fall of 1865, Southern states created new governments based on Johnson's plan. They also elected new representatives to Congress. When the Southern representatives arrived in Washington, D.C., however, Congress refused to seat them. Many Republicans refused to readmit the Southern states on such easy terms. Black Codes. By early 1866, Southern states had passed black codes or laws to control freed men and women. The black codes trampled the rights of African Americans. They allowed plantation owners to exploit African American workers and allowed officials to arrest and fine jobless African Americans. The codes also banned African Americans from owning or renting farms. To freed men and women, and many Northerners, the black codes resembled slavery. In early 1866, Congress passed a bill giving the Freedmen's Bureau new powers. The agency could now set up special courts to try individuals charged with violating the rights of African Americans. African Americans could also serve on juries in these courts. Congress then passed the Civil Rights Act of 1866. This act granted full citizenship to African Americans and gave the federal government the power to intervene in state affairs to protect their rights. The law overturned the black codes. It also contradicted the 1857 Dred Scott decision of the Supreme Court, which had ruled that African Americans were not citizens. President Johnson vetoed both bills. He argued that the federal government was overstepping its authority. He also argued that the Freedmen's Bureau Bill and the Civil Rights Act were unconstitutional because they were approved by a Congress that did not include representatives from all of the states. By raising this issue, Johnson indirectly threatened to veto any law passed by this Congress. Republicans in Congress had enough votes to override or defeat both vetoes, and the bills became law. The chances of the president and Congress working together faded. The radical Republicans abandoned the idea of compromise and drafted a new Reconstruction plan, one created by Congress. The 14th Amendment. Fearing that the Civil Rights Act might be overturned in court, Congress passed a new amendment to the Constitution in 1866. The 14th Amendment was enacted in 1868. It granted full citizenship to all people born in the United States. Because most African Americans in the United States had been born in the country, they became full citizens. The amendment also stated that no state could take away a citizen's life, liberty, or property without due process of law. In addition to this, every citizen was entitled to equal protection of the laws. If a state prevented any adult male citizen from voting, then it could lose some of its representation in Congress. The amendment also barred former Confederate leaders from holding national or state office unless pardoned by Congress. The 14th Amendment also excluded Native Americans from citizenship. Congress declared that Southern states had to ratify the amendment to rejoin the Union. Of the 11 Southern states, only Tennessee ratified it. The refusal of the other Southern states to ratify delayed the amendment's adoption until 1868. Republican victory. In the congressional elections of 1866, President Johnson campaigned vigorously against the radical Republicans. Many Northerners objected to the nasty tone of Johnson's campaign and feared clashes between whites and African Americans. The Republicans won a solid victory, giving Congress the signal to take Reconstruction into its own hands. Reading check, explaining, why did Johnson consider the Civil Rights Bill unconstitutional? Radical Reconstruction. Main idea. Radical Republicans were able to put their version of Reconstruction into action. History and you. If you were a member of Congress at this time, what changes would you like to see in a Reconstruction plan? Read to find out how the Radical Republicans shaped Reconstruction. President Johnson could do little to stop Republicans because they could easily override his vetoes in Congress. Thus began a period known as Radical Reconstruction. Reconstruction Acts of 1867. The first Reconstruction Act passed in 1867 called for the creation of new governments in the 10 Southern states that had not ratified the 14th Amendment. Tennessee, which ratified, kept its government and rejoined the Union. The Act divided the 10 Southern states into 5 military districts, each run by a military commander, until new governments were formed. The Act also guaranteed African American men the right to vote in state elections and banned former Confederate leaders from holding political office. To rejoin the Union, the states had to ratify the 14th Amendment and submit new state constitutions to Congress for approval. A second Reconstruction Act required the military commanders to register voters and prepare for state constitutional conventions. Readmission of states. Many white Southerners refused to take part in the elections for constitutional conventions and state governments. Thousands of newly registered African-American voters, however, voted. In the elections, Republicans gained control of Southern state governments. By 1868, 7 Southern states, Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, North Carolina, and South Carolina, had established new governments and met the requirements for readmission. By 1870, Mississippi, Virginia, and Texas were restored to the Union. Impeaching the President. Strongly opposed to radical Reconstruction, President Johnson had the power as Commander-in-Chief of the Army to direct the actions of the military governors. For this reason, Congress passed a series of laws to limit the President's power, such as the Tenure of Office Act. It prohibited the President from removing government officials, including members of his own cabinet, without the Senate's approval. The conflict between Johnson and the radicals grew more intense. In August 1867, when Congress was not in session, Johnson suspended, removed from office temporarily, Secretary of War Edwin Stanton without the Senate's approval. When the Senate met again and refused to approve the suspension, Johnson removed Stanton from office. This action was a deliberate violation of the Tenure of Office Act. Johnson also appointed people who the radical Republicans opposed to command some of the Southern military districts. Outraged by Johnson's actions, the House of Representatives voted to impeach the President, or formally charge him, with wrongdoing. In 1868, the case went to the Senate for a trial that lasted almost 3 months. Johnson's defenders claimed that the president was exercising his right to challenge laws he considered unconstitutional. They argued that Congress impeached the president because of politics, without accusing him of a crime. Johnson's critics disputed that Congress held supreme power to make the laws, and that Johnson's use of the veto improperly interfered with this function. The senators failed to achieve the two-thirds majority required for conviction. Some moderate Republicans supported the president, arguing that Johnson should not be removed from office because of political differences. As a result, Johnson stayed in office until the end of his term in March 1869. The 15th Amendment. By the presidential election of 1868, most southern states had rejoined the Union, and many Americans hoped that Reconstruction was over. Abandoning Johnson, the Republicans nominated Ulysses S. Grant, the Civil War hero. The Democrats chose Horatio Seymour. Grant received most of the African-American votes in the South and won the presidency. The 1868 election showed that voters supported the Republican approach to Reconstruction. In 1869, Congress passed the 15th Amendment. It prohibited the state and federal governments from denying the right to vote to any male citizen because of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. African-American men won the right to vote when the amendment was ratified and became law in 1870. Republicans thought the power of the vote would enable African-Americans to protect themselves. That belief, however, was too optimistic. Reading check. Explaining. How did Republicans organize the South during Reconstruction? Section 3. The South During Reconstruction. American Diary. John Roy Lynch, once enslaved, ran a business in Mississippi. In the 1869 election, the first in which African Americans could vote, Lynch was elected to the Mississippi State Legislature. Lynch later recalled that the campaign was aggressive. The election resulted in a sweeping Republican victory. That party not only elected the state ticket, but also had a large majority in the state legislature. From Reminiscences of an Active Life, the autobiography of John Roy Lynch. Reconstruction Politics. Main idea. As African Americans began to take part in civic life in the South, they faced resistance, including violence, from whites. History and you. Do some people today use mean names to refer to someone they don't like? Read to learn what former Confederates called Republican supporters in the South. During Reconstruction, Republicans dominated Southern politics. Support for the Republican Party came from African Americans, white Southerners who supported Republican policies, and white settlers from the North. These groups were in charge of the state governments. African Americans in Government. African Americans played an important role in Reconstruction politics, both as voters and as elected officials. In some states, they contributed heavily to Republican victories. African Americans did not control any state government, although they briefly held a majority in the lower house of the South Carolina legislature. In other southern states, they held important positions, but never in proportion to their numbers. At the national level, 16 African Americans served in the House of Representatives and 2 in the Senate between 1869 and 1880. Hiram Revels, one of the African American senators, was an ordained minister who had recruited African Americans for the Union Army. He also started a school for freed African Americans in Missouri and served as chaplain of an African American regiment in Mississippi. Revels remained in Mississippi after the war and was elected to the U.S. Senate in 1870. Blanche K. Bruce, the other African-American senator, also came from Mississippi. A former escaped slave, Bruce taught in a school for African-Americans in Missouri when the war began. In 1869, he went to Mississippi, entered politics, and was elected to the U.S. Senate in 1874. Scalawags and Carpetbaggers. Some Southern whites, such as pro-Union business leaders and non-slaveholding farmers, backed the Republicans. Former Confederates called them scalawags, a term meaning scoundrel or worthless rascal. Many Northern whites who moved to the South after the war also supported the Republicans. Critics called these Northerners carpetbaggers because they arrived with all their belongings in cheap suitcases made of carpet fabric. Although some carpetbaggers were dishonest, most were not. Many were reformers who wanted to help the South. Many Southerners accused Reconstruction governments of corruption, or dishonest or illegal actions. Although some officials made money illegally, probably less corruption occurred in the South than in the North. Resistance to Reconstruction. Most Southern whites opposed efforts to expand African Americans' rights. Life soon became difficult for African Americans. Most white landowners refused to rent land to freed people. Store owners refused them credit, extra time to pay for goods, and employers would not hire them. Secret societies such as the Ku Klux Klan used fear and violence to deny rights to freed men and women. Wearing white sheets and hoods, Klan members killed thousands of African Americans and their white friends. They beat and wounded many more, and burned African American homes, schools, and churches. Many Southerners, especially planters and Democrats, backed the Klan. These people, who had the most to gain from the return of white supremacy, saw violence as a defense against Republican rule. In 1870 and 1871, Congress passed several laws to try to stop the growing violence of the Klan. These laws met with limited success. Most white Southerners refused to testify against those who attacked African Americans and their white supporters. Reading check, explaining, who were the scallywags and carpetbaggers? Why did many Southerners resent them? Education and farming. Main idea. Education improved for both races in the South, but the sharecropping system limited economic opportunities for African Americans. History and you. If you could not attend school, how would the course of your life change? Read about advances in education in the South. During Reconstruction, African Americans created their own schools. The Freedmen's Bureau also helped spread education. Northern women and African Americans came South to teach in schools. In the 1870s, Reconstruction governments created public schools for both races. Within a few years, about 50% of white children and 40% of African American children in the South were enrolled. Northern missionary societies set up academies, schools for special training. These academies grew into a network of African American colleges and universities, including Fisk University in Tennessee and Morehouse College in Georgia. Generally, African American and white students attended different schools. Only a very few states required that schools be integrated, include both whites and African Americans. But the laws were not enforced. Along with education, most freed people wanted land. Some African Americans purchased land with the help of the Freedmen's Bank, but most failed to get their own land. The most common form of farm work for freed people was sharecropping. In this system, a landowner rented a plot of land to a sharecropper, or farmer, along with a crude shack, some seeds and tools, and perhaps a mule. In return, sharecroppers shared a percentage of their crops with the landowners. After paying the landowners, sharecroppers often had little left to sell. Sometimes there was barely enough to feed their families. For many, sharecropping was little better than slavery. Reading check. Describing. What was the relationship between sharecroppers and landowners? Time Notebook. What were people's lives like in the past? These two pages will give you some clues to everyday life in the United States as you step back in time with Time Notebook. New railway crosses the country. Getting there. By now you have probably heard that the tracks of the Union Pacific and Central Pacific Railways met up in Utah on May 10, 1869, completing the first transcontinental railroad in the United States. A pioneer named Alexander Tapance wrote about the events that day. When they came to drive the last spike, Governor Stanford, president of the Central Pacific, took the sledge, and the first time he struck, he missed the spike and hit the rail. What a howl went up. Irish, Chinese, Mexicans, and everybody yelled with delight. He missed it. Yee! The engineers blew the whistles and rang their bells. Then Stanford tried it again and tapped the spike, and the telegraph operators had fixed their instruments so that the tap was reported in all the offices east and west and set bells to tapping in hundreds of towns and cities. Then Vice President T.C. Durant of the Union Pacific took up the sledge, and he missed the spike the first time. Then everybody slapped everybody else again and yelled, "He missed it too! Yow!" It was a great occasion. Everyone carried off souvenirs, and there are enough splinters of the last tie-in museums to make a good bonfire. Verbatim. What people are saying. I will never pay a dollar of your unjust fine. Susan B. Anthony. After being arrested and fined $100 for voting in the 1872 election. Mr. Watson, come here, I want you. Alexander Graham Bell, in 1876, making the first phone call to his assistant. The shouts, groans, curses, smashing of seats, screams of women, shuffling of feet, and cries of terror created a pandemonium that will stand out in my memory as the hell of hells. Helen Truman, an audience member at Ford's Theater the night Lincoln was shot in 1865. It seemed like it took a long time for freedom to come. Everything just kept on like it was. Millie Freeman, former enslaved African-American about life after the Civil War. 40 miles away, we still saw the brilliant flames looming above the doomed city. John Chapin, a witness to the Great Chicago Fire in 1871, which killed 250 people and destroyed 18,000 buildings. A Changing Country, 1865 to 1877. Virginia Stats, State of the Union. Richmond had been the capital of the Confederacy, and Virginia paid the price after the Civil War. One of the states most ravaged by battles, Virginia's farm value sank from 5th in the country to 10th. The state tried to get new business by lowering taxes. That led to more factories, but they produced less than in the past. Number of farms, 1860, 86,468. 1870, 73,849. Value of farmland, 1860, $371.8 million. 1870, $213 million. Number of factories, 1860, 5,385. 1870, 5,933. Value of manufactured products, 1860, $50.7 million. 1870, $38.4 million. Milestones. Events and people of the time. Drawn, an elephant to represent jittery Republican voters, by Thomas Nast before the presidential election in 1874. Looks like his symbol for Republicans might stick. After all, Nast is the artist who drew a mule to represent Democrats. Stretched, baseball fans in 1882 in what is becoming known as the seventh inning stretch. The athletic director of New York's Manhattan College baseball team felt sorry for fidgety students in the crowd and told them to stand up and stretch during a game. Word has it that New York Giants fans will copy the practice. Driven out. African-American members of the Georgia legislature in 1868, after white members claimed that African-Americans might vote but not hold office. Numbers. United States at the time. 2 cents. About the price per acre the United States paid for Alaska in 1867. The total price is $7.2 million. 600,000. Approximate number of African Americans in the South who had enrolled in school by 1877. $125. Price of a typewriter invented by Christopher Sholes in 1868. $120 billion. Number of locusts in a swarm that reached a mile high, 100 miles wide, 161 kilometers, and up to 300 miles long, 483 kilometers, wiping out crops in the West in 1874. 10,000. Number of people who went to the first Kentucky Derby horse race in 1875. Critical thinking. Speculating. Based on Susan B. Anthony's reaction to her voting fine, what personal and philosophical qualities do you think she had? Assessing, how might the values of Virginia's farms and manufacturing economies have affected the lives of its citizens after the Civil War? Use the table to help explain your answer. Section 4. Change in the South. American Diary. In 1875, Mississippi's governor, Adelbert Ames, appealed for federal troops to end racial violence in his state. The Attorney General responded, "The whole public are tired out with these outbreaks in the South. Preserve the peace by the forces in your own state." His sharp tone revealed the desire of the Grant administration to end the federal government's involvement with Reconstruction. Quoted in The Great Betrayal. The End of Reconstruction. Main Idea. Democrats steadily regained control of Southern governments as support for radical Reconstruction policies decreased. History and you. Would you lose respect for a famous sports star if you learned he or she was cheating? Read how scandals weakened public support for the radical Republicans. During the Grant administration, Northerners began losing interest in Reconstruction. Many believed it was time for the South to solve its own problems. Reconstruction declined for other reasons as well. The old radical leaders began to disappear from politics. Thaddeus Stevens died in 1868. Others retired or lost elections. Opponents of Reconstruction also exploited racial prejudice in the North. They argued that only Southerners really knew how to deal with African Americans and that the fate of the freed people should be left to the South. Southerners protested what they called bayonet rule, the use of federal troops to support Reconstruction governments. Grant tried to avoid any clashes with the South. Republican Revolt. In the early 1870s, reports of corruption in Grant's administration and in Reconstruction governments spread. Some Republicans split with the party over the issue of corruption. Another group broke with the party over Reconstruction, proposing peaceful reconciliation, coming together again with Southern whites. Calling themselves liberal Republicans, these two groups nominated Horace Greeley, a newspaper editor, to run against Grant in 1872. Despite the split among Republicans, Grant was reelected. Democrats regain power. In 1872, liberal Republicans helped pass the Amnesty Act, which pardoned most former Confederates. Nearly all white Southerners could vote and hold office again. The amnesty changed the political balance in the South by restoring full rights to people who supported the Democratic Party. In Southern states where a majority of voters were white, Democrats soon regained control of state governments. In states where African Americans held a majority, the Ku Klux Klan helped the Democrats take power by terrorizing Republican voters. The Republicans had other problems as well. In 1873, a series of political scandals came to light. Investigations uncovered top government officials making unfair business deals, scheming to withhold public tax money, and accepting bribes. One scandal involved the vice president and another the secretary of war. These scandals further damaged the Grant administration and the Republicans. In addition to political scandals, Grant and the nation endured a severe economic depression. The crisis began in 1873 when a series of bad railroad investments forced the powerful banking firm of J. Cook & Company to declare bankruptcy. A wave of fear known as the Panic of 1873 quickly spread through the nation's financial community. The panic forced small banks to close and the stock market to plummet. Thousands of businesses shut down, and tens of thousands of Americans were thrown out of work. Blame for the hard times fell on the Republicans. In the congressional elections of 1874, Democrats gained seats in the Senate and won control of the House. For the first time since the Civil War, the Democratic Party controlled a part of the federal government. This situation further weakened Congress's commitment to Reconstruction and protecting the rights of African Americans. The election of 1876. President Grant considered running for a third term in 1876. Most Republican leaders preferred a new candidate, one who could win back the liberal Republicans and unite the party. The Republicans nominated Rutherford B. Hayes, governor of Ohio. A champion of political reform, Hayes had a reputation for honesty, and he held moderate views on Reconstruction. The Democrats nominated New York Governor Samuel Tilden. Tilden gained fame for fighting political corruption in New York City. After the election, Tilden appeared to be the winner, receiving almost 250,000 more votes than Hayes. However, disputed returns from four states representing 20 electoral votes kept the outcome or results in doubt. Tilden had 184 electoral votes, only one short of what he needed to win. Yet if Hayes received all 20 of the disputed votes, he would have the 185 electoral votes required for victory. To review the election results, Congress created a special commission, or group, of 15 persons, made up equally of members of the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the Supreme Court. The commission had 7 Republicans, 7 Democrats, and 1 Independent. But the Independent resigned, and a Republican took his place. The commission voted 8-7 to award all 20 electoral votes and the election to Hayes. The vote followed party lines. Compromise of 1877. Democrats in Congress threatened to fight the commission's decision. Republican and Southern Democratic leaders reportedly met in secret to work out an agreement. On March 2, 1877, Congress declared Hayes the winner. The agreement, called the Compromise of 1877, included some favors to the South. The new government would give more aid to the South. Republicans agreed to withdraw all remaining troops from Southern states. Without soldiers to support them, the remaining Republican governments in South Carolina and Louisiana quickly collapsed. The Democrats, in turn, promised to maintain African-American rights. A new policy. In his inaugural address, Hayes declared that what the South needed most was the restoration of wise, honest, and peaceful, loyal self-government. During a goodwill trip to the South, Hayes announced his intention of letting Southerners handle racial issues. Hayes' message was clear. The federal government would no longer attempt to reshape Southern society. Reconstruction had come to an end. Reading check. Summarizing. How did the Compromise of 1877 affect Reconstruction? Change in the South. Main idea. After Reconstruction, the South experienced a political shift and industrial growth. History and you. Do you recall that lack of industry put the South at a disadvantage during the Civil War? Read to learn how Southerners vowed to create a strong, industrial, new South. Many Southern whites hated Republicans for their role in the Civil War and in Reconstruction. When Reconstruction ended, power in the South shifted to the Democrats. Democrats in control. In some regions, the ruling Democrats were the large landowners and other groups that held power before the Civil War. In many areas, however, new leaders took charge. Among their ranks were merchants, bankers, and other business leaders who supported economic development. Change in politics. These Democrats called themselves Redeemers because they had redeemed or saved the South from Republican rule. The Redeemers adopted conservative policies such as lower taxes and reduced government spending. They drastically cut or even eliminated many social services started during Reconstruction, including public education. Their one-party rule and conservative policies dominated Southern politics well into the 1900s. Rise of the New South. By the 1880s, forward-looking Southerners were convinced that their region must develop a strong industrial economy. They argued that the South lost the Civil War because its industry did not match the North's. Henry Grady, editor of the Atlanta Constitution, headed a group that urged Southerners to out-Yankee the Yankees and build a new South. This new South would have industries based on the region's abundant coal, iron, tobacco, cotton, and lumber. Southerners would create this new economy by embracing a spirit of hard work and regional pride. Industry in the South made dramatic gains in the 1880s. Textile mills sprang up across the South. The American Tobacco Company, developed largely by James Duke of North Carolina, eventually controlled almost all tobacco manufacturing in the nation. By 1890, Southern mills produced nearly 20% of the nation's iron and steel. Much of the industry was in Alabama near deposits of iron ore. Southern industry grew as a result of a cheap and reliable workforce. Most factory workers put in long hours for low wages. A railroad building boom also aided industrial development. By 1870, the Southern railroad system, which had been destroyed during the war, was largely rebuilt. The miles of rail track more than doubled between 1880 and 1890. Still, the South did not develop an industrial economy as strong as the North's. Agriculture remained the South's main economic activity. Rural economy. Supporters of the New South hoped to change Southern agriculture as well as industry. Their goal was small, profitable farms raising a variety of crops, rather than large plantations devoted to cotton. A different economy emerged, however. Some plantations were broken up, but many large landowners held on to their land. When estates were divided, much of the land went to sharecropping and tenant farming, neither of which was profitable. Debt also caused problems. Poor farmers used credit to buy supplies. Merchants who sold on credit charged high prices, and farmers' debts rose. To repay debts, farmers grew cash crops, crops that could be sold for money. As in the past, the main cash crop was cotton. Too much cotton forced prices down, however. Farmers then had to grow even more cotton to try to recover their losses. Sharecropping and reliance on one cash crop kept Southern agriculture from advancing. Reading check. Describing. Why did industry in the South grow during this period? A divided society. Main idea. As Reconstruction ended, true freedom for African Americans became a distant dream. History and you. How would you feel if you had to pass a test on a subject you never studied in order to graduate? Read to learn about a test African Americans in the South had to pass in order to vote. As Reconstruction ended, African Americans' dreams for justice faded. In the last 20 years of the 1880s, racism became firmly set in the culture. Individuals took steps to keep African Americans separated from whites and to deny them basic rights. Voting restrictions. The 15th Amendment prohibited any state from denying an individual the right to vote because of race. Southern leaders, however, found ways to get around the amendment and prevent African Americans from voting. Many Southern states required a poll tax, a fee people had to pay to vote. Because many African Americans could not afford the tax, they could not vote. The tax also kept many poor whites from voting. Another approach was to make prospective voters take a literacy test in which they had to read and explain difficult parts of state constitutions or the federal constitution. Because most African Americans had little education, literacy tests prevented many from voting. Literacy tests could also keep some whites from voting. For this reason, some states passed grandfather clauses. These laws allowed people who did not pass the literacy test to vote if their fathers or grandfathers voted before Reconstruction. Because African Americans could not vote until 1867, they were excluded. By the end of the 1880s, such laws and the constant threat of violence caused African American voting to decline drastically. Jim Crow laws. By the 1890s, segregation, or the separation of the races, had become a common feature of the South. Southern states passed so-called Jim Crow laws that required African Americans and whites to be separated in almost every public place. In 1896, the Supreme Court upheld segregation laws in Plessy v. Ferguson. The case involved a Louisiana law requiring separate sections on trains for African Americans. The court ruled that segregation was legal as long as African Americans had access to public places equal to those of whites. One problem, however, was that the facilities were separate but in no way equal. Southern states spent much more money on schools and other facilities for whites than on those for African Americans. This separate but equal doctrine gave legal support to Southern segregation for more than 50 years. White violence against African Americans also rose. One form of violence was lynching, in which an angry mob killed a person by hanging. African Americans were lynched because they were suspected of crimes or because they did not behave as whites thought they should behave. Reconstruction's impact. Reconstruction was both a success and a failure. It helped the South rebuild its economy, yet much of the South remained agricultural and poor. African Americans gained greater equality, created their own institutions, and shared in government with whites. Their advances, however, did not last. In the words of African American writer and civil rights leader W.E.B. Du Bois, "The slave went free, stood a brief moment in the sun, then moved back again toward slavery." Reading check, describing, how was segregation applied? National Geographic, Geography and History. Southern industry after the Civil War. Before the Civil War, the backbone of the Southern economy was agriculture. After Reconstruction, industry in the South made dramatic gains. How did geography affect Southern industry? Many Southern industries after the Civil War centered around regional agricultural products such as tobacco and cotton. In the 1880s, textile mills sprang up throughout the South. Additionally, Southern forests provided lumber for new homes, factories, railroad ties, and above all, furniture. Other Southern industries centered on the region's rich reserves of coal and iron. By 1900, the South led the world in coal production. This same period saw a large growth in iron and steel mills.